Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Tuesday, January 14th. I'm Peter Biello. On this podcast, you'll hear the GPB News team's most recent reports. Your tips and suggestions for future episodes are welcome. Email georgiatoday@gpb.org. On today's episode, state senators authorize an investigation into Fulton County DA Fonnie Willis. Importers in Savannah brace themselves for new tariffs. And in 2011, an executive at the Cartoon Network brought Atlanta rapper Killer Mike and Brooklyn producer LP together to produce an album.
He thought that Mike and LP would be a great fit stylistically and also usher in something that hadn't been done before.
What emerged was Run the Jewels, an iconic rap duo known as much for their beats as their politics. A new book looks into their rise. We'll hear from author Yap Vanderdoolen. All that and more coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. The Georgia State Senate is once again turning its attention to Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis. State senators voted yesterday to reauthorize a Senate committee on special investigations to examine her office. Democrats, including Sandy Springs State Senator Josh McLaurin, criticized the move, calling the investigation purely political.
This is a fixation on the past. But worse than that, it is a fixation on the past that is driven primarily by the obsessions of one man.
Last year, the committee investigated Willis's conduct and her case against President-elect Donald Trump. Willis was subpoenaed to testify, but argued the committee lacked constitutional authority. In December, a judge ruled the committee does have the authority to subpoena Willis. Meanwhile, after a week of legal wrangling, the U.S. Department of Justice Special Counsel Jack Smith's report on President-elect Trump's attempts to interfere in the 2020 election have been released. GPB's Chase McGee has more.
Trump will not face federal prosecution over the contents of the report. The Department of Justice maintains they do not prosecute sitting presidents. Smith says if Trump had not secured re-election, the evidence was, quote, sufficient to obtain and sustain a conviction at trial. The report outlines the infamous call Trump made to Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, pressuring him to find enough votes to overturn the election results in Georgia. After losing the election, Trump held a rally in Dalton, Georgia, where he pressured Vice President Mike Pence to alter the outcome of the 2020 election.
Of course, if he doesn't come through, I won't like him quite as much.
Jack Smith resigned from the Justice Department after submitting the report. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
Governor Brian Kemp laid out some of his legislative priorities during the Georgia Chamber's annual Eggs and Issues this morning. GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
Kemp told the gathering of business leaders that controlling the number of lawsuits in Georgia is essential.
Tort reform will be my top legislative priority for this upcoming session.
He says the push for tort reform and changing the rules around civil lawsuits has been a multi-year effort.
I will soon be unveiling a robust legislative package that will bring balance to our proceedings and parity with our neighbors.
Proponents of tort reform say it could lower insurance costs. Other priorities for Kemp include workforce training and housing in rural communities. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis in Atlanta.
Governor Brian Kemp announced more funding for schools on the first day of the legislative session. Kemp announced a hefty one-time increase in the school safety grant to help schools beef up their security months after a deadly shooting at a high school in Winder.
With that in mind, I am proposing an additional $50 million in one-time school security grants.
That money, combined with the existing school safety grant, will even out to about $68,000 per school. Kemp also announced more funding for student transportation and money to increase the number of school psychologists. Georgia continues to lead the nation in the growth of clean energy transition-related jobs, especially in rural and disadvantaged areas. That's according to a new report by the advocacy group Climate Power. GPB's Grant Blankenship has more.
Since 2022, Climate Power has compiled public announcements of clean energy sector jobs incentivized by the Inflation Reduction Act. For 2024, the group counted over 43,000 of these new jobs in Georgia, close to twice as many as the number two state, New York. Nationally, most of these jobs flow to Republican congressional districts, and three of the top 10 Republican House districts for clean energy job growth are in Georgia. That's Buddy Carter's 1st District, anchored by the Hyundai Megaplant in Bryan County, Barry Loudermilk's 11th District in Northwest Georgia, home to Qcell Solar, and Georgia's 10th District, represented by Mike Collins and home to SK Battery in Commerce. Donald Trump will become president again next week. He and various Republican lawmakers have signaled their intent to cut Inflation Reduction Act spending. For GPB News, I'm Grant Blankenship in Macon.
The Lake and Riley Act cleared another procedural hurdle in the U.S. Senate yesterday, bringing it one step closer to final passage. Named for a Georgia nursing student killed by an immigrant who entered the U.S. illegally, the bill would allow the detention of unauthorized immigrants accused but not convicted of certain crimes and give states more control over immigration. Emory University law professor Emily Davis says that likely would set up legal challenges that could take years to sort out.
Criminal law applies the same to non-citizens and citizens. Additionally, stripping the federal government of its power to control immigration and to make immigration law and giving that to the states, I think would also create a constitutional concern.
Democrats, including Georgia Senators Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, largely voted with Republicans on the measure. A U.S. Senate confirmation hearing for former Georgia Congressman Doug Collins is being delayed. President-elect Donald Trump nominated Collins to be the next Secretary of Veterans Affairs. In a statement yesterday, the chairman of the Senate's Committee on Veterans Affairs says his hearing would be delayed by a week because the FBI hasn't yet completed his background check. Collins represented a Northeast Georgia district for 3 2-year terms, winning notice for defending Trump during the Robert Mueller probe into Russian interference in U.S. elections. Atlanta leaders say the New Year's Eve vehicle attack on Bourbon Street, New Orleans, has helped guide their security plans for the college football national championship game. They also urge people who see threats online to report them to authorities. At a briefing this morning, Atlanta's police chief said his department took note of how a vehicle was able to ram into tourists on Bourbon Street. Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta will host Monday's game between the University of Notre Dame and Ohio State University. Authorities spoke in general terms about security plans without sharing specifics. Tariffs were among the many campaign promises made by President-elect Donald Trump last year. Now, with less than a week to go before Inauguration Day, U.S. importers are preparing to pay more money to ship goods in from overseas. Many of those importers can be found in Savannah, a major gateway for global trade. GPB's Benjamin Payne reports on how tariffs may impact commerce in Georgia.
It's nighttime along the Savannah River, where massive container ships slip through the darkness, their horns echoing across the water. These vessels and the cargo they carry represent billions in international trade, trade that could soon look very different.
With a world-class port and a world-class workforce, this city will soon become one of the premier export hubs anywhere on Earth, tripling and quadrupling traffic as your power will lead an American manufacturing boom.
That was Trump at a rally in Savannah last year. On the campaign trail, candidate Trump teased universal tariffs of up to 20% on all imports, though trade experts expect a more targeted approach from a President Trump. This uncertainty is creating real challenges for those in Savannah's bustling logistics industry, like Tom Patterson. He's a manager for a bicycle importer at the Port of Savannah.
Whether it's all smoke or not, nobody really knows. You know, like, we don't know if it's just hyperbole that he's been spitting or reality. We have to plan for reality and hope it's not.
Patterson says retailers might use tariffs as an excuse to raise prices, something he thinks they planned on doing anyway.
They've already built their profit plans for next year, and they're going to maintain them come hell or high water. And so whether their suppliers shoulder the burden of tariffs, it doesn't matter to them. They're going to raise their prices as they've already planned to raise their prices. I mean, retailers will.
Griff Lynch is president and CEO of the Georgia Ports Authority, which oversees both the ports of Savannah and Brunswick. He says manufacturing growth from tariffs, if it happens, won't be immediate.
I think it depends on what the goal is here. If the goal is to create exports, you know, and production and manufacturing for the U.S., I think it won't have any impact in the near term. In the long term, certainly it could drive growth to the U.S.
That's if it becomes cheaper to make things here than to import them from other countries. The impact could extend beyond manufacturing to your grocery bill, considering that Savannah doesn't just bring in heavy cargo, but also fresh produce. In fact, the world's largest cold food storage company, Lineage Logistics, recently opened a facility in Port Wentworth, basically a giant freezer just outside Savannah. Here was Jim Henderson, the company's vice president of global sales, at the unveiling.
We looked at facilities all over the world at many different ports, and we said the Port of Savannah is really the perfect spot for us to be able to get this product in, get it to market faster. Because it's fresh produce primarily, it's got a short shelf life.
And much of it is imported from the Southern Hemisphere. Back at the bicycle warehouse, Tom Patterson says the supply chain may be running out of flexibility after years of disruption. People in the operations world, he says, are
so tired of unprecedented times. We never stopped during COVID, and we never stopped during supply chain interruptions in 2021, 2022. And it's just been one thing after another. And like, it just really feels like we're getting to a point where the supply chain and the logistics of it all are not as malleable as they once were.
Just how much the supply chain will need to bend and how much that slows action at the Port of Savannah should begin to become clear next week after Trump returns to the White House. For GPB News, I'm Benjamin Payne in Savannah.
Run the Jewels began as a one-off collaboration between Atlanta rapper Killer Mike and Brooklyn-born rapper LP more than a decade ago. Four albums and dozens of remixes later, Run the Jewels has built a cult following by capturing the discontent of the poor and the oppressed.
We overwork, underpaid, and we underprivileged. They love us, why? Because we beat the village. You really made it or just became a prisoner of privilege. You willing to share that information that you've been given?
The new book looks at the music the duo has created and the political landscape it emerged from. It's called Kill Your Masters, Run the Jewels and the World That Made Them. Author Jaap van der Doelen is with me now. Welcome to the program.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Michael Render, also known as Killer Mike, and Jamie Moline, a.k.a. LP, they kind of formed an unlikely partnership. Can you talk a little bit about how these two guys came together to form Run the Jewels?
They met through Jason DeMarco, who was an executive at Adult Swim at the time, the nightly programming of Cartoon Network, and ran a music label, which grew out of reaching out to musicians that he respected to create various bumpers in between the programming slots on and the commercial slots on the television station. They brought a sense of cool to the television station, and he gave them a bigger platform than they had through music alone. Out of that grew a music label. And he wanted to publish a new solo record by Killer Mike. And he wanted to do something big. And he thought that Mike and LP would be a great fit stylistically and also usher in something that hadn't been done before, at least not in that way. And introduced them to each other. And he was 100% right. And they immediately hit it off. And initially, LP was only supposed to produce two or three tracks on the upcoming Killer Mike solo album. But they had such strong chemistry that Killer Mike just wanted to use only his beats on the album and basically badgered him into producing the entire album.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about some of the things that fans of Run the Jewels really like about them. One is that they don't dumb down their music, and although some of the lyrics can be on the nose, generally speaking, they aren't spoon-feeding you the interpretation they want you to have. Can you tell us a little bit about a song that exemplifies this?
I think a great song that exemplifies that is Early from Run the Jewels 2, which is still my personal favorite of theirs. In its first verse, Mike tells a first-person story about a man being arrested for a minor infraction. It's weed usage. And he still put my hands in cuff, put me in the truck when my woman screamed, said, shut up. Witches with the camera on us, saw the copper pull a gun and put it on my gorgeous queen. As I peered out the window, I could see my other kinfolk and hear my little boys scream. I think the smart thing about the way that Killer Mike tells this story is that nobody in the story wants this thing to happen. These are all people in a pressure cooker that society has put them in.
Each of Run the Jewels' four studio albums is responsive in its own way to the mood of the country. Can you give an example of how Run the Jewels has captured that mood?
I think the greatest example of this is also a very tragic one. It's Walking in the Snow on Run the Jewels' fourth album, and there's a moment in there where Killer Mike raps about being choked by a police officer. And every day on the evening news, they feed your fear for free. And you so numb, you watch the cops choke out a man like me. Until my voice goes from a shriek to whisper, I can't breathe. And you sit there, that song came out very shortly after the murder of George Floyd, but it was actually recorded in response to the murder of Eric Garner. They're tragedies in themselves, but there's an even bigger tragedy in the fact that they keep on repeating that they made this song in response to a tragedy, and then around the time that it comes out, another extremely similar tragedy has happened again. And I think that's it underscores how necessary it is to keep on responding and grappling with these instances and not turn a blind eye towards them.
One testament to the group's strength was the choice to put Killer Mike at the podium when Atlantans were rioting in the wake of the killing of George Floyd in 2020. Wearing a shirt that says, "Kill your masters," Killer Mike went on camera and told Atlantans to stop destroying their own home and start organizing.
And it is the responsibility of us to make this better right now. We don't want to see one officer charged. We want to see four officers prosecuted and sentenced. We don't want to see targets burning. We want to see the system that sets up for systemic racism burnt to the ground.
You started your book describing this speech. What does this say about the impact of Run the Jewels music that the government turned to Killer Mike to try to calm things down?
I think it resonated with so many people, maybe also because of the juxtaposition of the T-shirt and what he was saying. This isn't a man that's saying don't riot or don't express your pain. He's acknowledging the pain that people are feeling. He is acknowledging that it is their anger is just. But he is also explaining to them in a very honest and down-to-earth way that there are better ways to express this anger, to use this anger as fuel to organize, not burn down your own fortress that you need to organize. That there have been he has also referenced the riots that happened in Ferguson.
You're talking about Ferguson, Missouri, where Michael Brown was killed in 2014.
Which had direct results for the people in Ferguson to the betterment of their community. Riots there worked. They got results. But he's saying, don't burn down your own economy. He gave them a very direct way of how to be, how to use those emotions in a more constructive manner to the betterment of their community.
Well, the book is Kill Your Masters, Run the Jewels, and the World That Made Them. Jaap van der Doelen, thank you so much for speaking with me. I really do appreciate it.
Likewise, Peter. Thanks for taking out the time.
Jaap van der Doelen's book about Run the Jewels is the subject of the latest episode of Narrative Edge, GPB's podcast about books with Georgia connections. We hear more of RTJ's music and extra insights about the book. Find Narrative Edge at gpb.org/narrativeedge or wherever you get your podcasts. One more story before we wrap up today. Bucky's, the gas and go stop with a couple of locations in Georgia and many more scattered throughout the American South, got approval from the Middle Georgia Monroe County Commission last month for a new 74,000 square foot location off I-75. Bucky's is a place to get your jerky, mixed nuts, hot sauce, plush toys, Beaver branded clothing, and brisket, of course, and it's been sold to residents of Monroe County as a possible source of tax revenue. The exact amount of money collected in sales tax varies. During the meeting to approve the new Bucky's, several attendees claimed it could generate around $30 million in tax revenue per year for the county. But that figure, $30 million, is actually how much Bucky's estimates it'll generate in retail sales for the company at the Monroe County location. That's according to documents Bucky's submitted to Monroe County. And in Monroe County, the combined sales tax rate, which is the total of state, county, and city sales tax rates, is 8%. So that puts the estimated number of dollars to Monroe County at about 900,000. But it could come not exclusively from the locals, but from those just passing through who can't resist a slice of brisket and a photo with a guy in a beaver costume. And that's it. Thanks once again for listening to Georgia Today. We do appreciate it. And we will be back tomorrow with all the latest news. So make sure you subscribe to this podcast. That way you won't miss a thing. And if you want to check out the details on these stories, head on over to our website, gpb.org/news. We are always posting news stories there. And again, your feedback is welcome. Send it to us by email. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. Back tomorrow with more news from Georgia.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.